Church, a ridiculously queer podcast where we take a deep dive into a horror film and talk about how it connects to queerness, religion, theology. My name is Pace Warfield May. Hopefully the unicorn in the Troy Grady polyamorous dad or something like that, because they are both very...
They are so cute. It's true. And I'm Pastor Emily, and I am the Zillow rating for how ghost-proof a potential residence is.
Love it. Love it.
I am Michael, and I am the vomit-inducing holes in Anthony's body.
Ooh, so gross and creepy.
So bad.
And I am Bobby Torres, and I'm the whole fucking hive. How about that?
Yes. Oh, I love it. Nice. So for our listeners at home, we are super honored to have returning guest Bobby Torres and his co-host, Mike, who are the horror duo that hosts People Under the Scares podcast. You can find them reviewing horror films, having villain battles, final girl debates, etc. every Monday to combat that dreaded first day of the world. How are you both?
I am great. How are you both doing?
Well.
I'm pretty good. I'm happy to be here.
It's good. Yay. Yeah, check out our Ghostbusters episode if you want more Bobby Torres on this. That was a blast.
I was trying to remember which.
Yeah, and now we have you back for a different type of ghost movie, but still kind of a ghost movie.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get into that stuff in a little bit. Just a few announcements before we do. It is Pride Month when this is coming out, so this kind of an unofficial queer miniseries we're doing on like stuff, but I mean, it's, we didn't really plan it to be kind of queer, but all the movies
all
we're doing this month
kind of queer,
pretty queer.
Yeah.
It's working, we're rolling with it. We almost are finished with C5, so we just have Nope and our Ghost Retrospective, and we'll be taking a break for July and August, but we'll be back September 7th with our Star on Patreon and YouTube, so subscribe to both of us.
Also, I have already started getting, I don't know how TikTok knows, but somehow TikTok already knows that I'm going to be watching Alien at some point. Like, I get that everybody knows that, like, all of the algorithms know that I like Star Wars, but somehow Alien is already a part of my TikTok experience, and we haven't even watched a movie yet. So
that's pretty scary.
It's scary.
I swear all it takes is mentioning it, the word, and it'll pop up.
For real. I try to put, like, my phone on the, like, don't listen to me, don't pay attention, don't do any. None of my housemates do, so all of their phones make those listen to me.
Yeah, don't tell the U.S. Senate, as they're currently debating TikTok about that. Or maybe they'll ban it again or try to again. Who knows? What all have you all been reading or watching this month? I've been mostly just kind of in a video game world lately, so I haven't been reading or replaying the Spider-Man, the from 18 or whatever, that game for PlayStation and sequel Spider-Man. And I didn't even realize this as I was doing it, but Tony Todd, who of course plays the original Candyman, is voicing Venom in the, so that's coming out later this year.
Ooh.
I had no idea, so I'm really excited for that.
I'm excited.
Nice.
I bet you are.
I mean, it's Tony Todd, like, hello.
Right. What about any of y'all?
I've also been playing Last of Us 2. I actually beat that. Very emotional, very stressful, but a great experience. And I've been watching Yellow Jackets and From.
Ooh.
Great shows. And I don't want to spoil anything, so I can't tell you guys too much, but check them out. From is on MGM Plus. Yellow Jackets is on Showtime.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm
waiting for my Showtime subscription where I can do like that free trial.
And then just,
it all week. Yep.
Yeah, I think Yellow Jackets is also on Hulu. Yellow Jackets is
if you have the Showtime extension on Hulu.
Same thing with Paramount Plus. Like Paramount Plus got like a collaboration with Showtime. So that's how I got it.
I'm gonna give you guys a trick. If you get Paramount, pretend you're gonna cancel. Just go to I'm canceling. They will give you either 50% off or a free month. I happen to have Showtime at the same time, so then I got both for free for another month. Nice. So if you want to binge, and Yellow Jackets just ended, so this is the perfect time.
Ooh, that's great.
One of my housemates is watching Yellow Jackets and has been campaigning with Pace and I for us to cover Yellow Jackets on our BrewTube at some point. So I have seen enough of it to know that it's like legit scary and freaky.
I would love to hear y'all like perspective on it. But while I'm talking about it, I've also been watching Yellow Jackets. I just finished the season 2 finale today. So like Mike said, I can't give nothing away because you guys probably haven't seen it yet. But I just was left with tears. That's all I'm going to say. But good show. I love that show. I'm catching up on From because I know we're on season 2. I'm still trying to finish season 1.
With a golf clap from Mike. Valiant effort.
It's just so much to watch, you know? So little time. Me and Mike have been watching pretty much the same stuff and playing the same stuff, only I'm a little behind. I'm still playing The Last of Us Part 1. I'm taking my time with it, and I'm having a good time, actually. At first, I was a little frustrated playing it because, like, it wasn't what I was expecting as far as the controllers, but I got into the groove of it, and it's actually a lot of fun, and I love the story. So, yeah, that's all I've been watching and playing.
Nice. Mm-hmm. I have been watching, like, none of the horror-y things. our household has watched The Ultimatum Show. They have a season that's like queer love season. And the like cishets finally unintentionally walked right into actual drama with like a whole bunch of like lesbians and non-binary people.
It is your percent surprise.
It's hilarious. Like everything from like the cishet host and like how it's set up and all of that is so very cishet. And then you throw in like eight couples or eight, no, I think eight, I don't know, however many like lesbians and non-binary people, and everybody's exes and all. It's hilarious.
Drama.
Yeah. So watching the Hillsong documentary, which is about, like, if you don't know what Hillsong is, you don't really want to know. It's a problematic, conservative, non-denomish church, mega church out of Australia. And there's some really bad shit that happens. And so,
a third of the dick that most churches that have contempt is originally from Hillsong. They're about, like, do you continue using that music? Most of fully progressive ones.
This sounds interesting. I may want to watch it, even though it's horrible. I may want to watch it.
The documentary is really good. Like, so far, they released, like, the first 2 episodes or something. So, it's really good. Hillsong as a, like, organization, not so much. But, yeah. I also started finally listening to our Star Wars From a Certain Point of View audiobook. Which is really great. It goes through, like, the first Star Wars movie, but, like, with all side characters. So, like, one of them is, like, one of the Jawas. You get, like, the Jawas' perspective. And it's, like, got some sound effects and some, like, really cool narrators for the audiobook. But it's got, like, Saba Tahir. The next story that I'm about to listen to is by Saba Tahir, who's one of my favorite authors. And so I just...
As we prepare for our Star Wars season, reminder for our listeners that sadly the Star Wars movies aren't very queer or diverse, a little bit more diverse. If you really wanted to get authorships, there's... It's a shame you didn't end on your Hillsong, though, because that would have been a perfect transition to our real-life church horror story. So this question is for both of you, though, Bobby, if you don't want to share again, you don't have to. But if you have it, if you do, please feel free. We asked this question of all our guests. It can be a real life church horror story about how awful and problematic a lot of churches are, or queer phobic things, or it can be as supernatural. And we've had the full spectrum of all of the above on the show. So whatever you feel like.
Oh, you want me to go about?
Well, mine is really, really quick. I don't really, you know, like the last time I was on here, like I said, I didn't really have one, but something happened to me recently at work, y'all.
Ooh.
Some guy came in, right? I rung him out, you know, I work in retail, doing my regular thing. And he just passed me a flyer. Guys, he's trying to convert me to go to church. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's like the scary. I'm joking. But yeah, that's pretty much it. It's just, my problem is, in my area, there's a lot of people that try to force you to believe in their religion. And it's kind of like a turnoff, because even if I was interested, it's just like, give me your number and, you know, like, here's this. And do you know, like, Psalm, such and such, such and such. I'm just like, I really can't do this right now. Like, it's, the whole conversion thing of it all is just, it's a turn off. So, yeah.
Working in retail, we always found them. So many retail horror sets, but like when I worked in Starbucks, I especially remember they'd leave them in the, like, just these tracks in the bathroom, so I don't throw them out whenever.
A whole stack on my calendar.
I had to do that in the hospital sometimes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I just shoved it off.
We had the shit off.
Yes.
Oh my God.
I had somebody leave like a flyer on my car. Somebody actually came by the other week, and it was like a group, and like the older man is the one who comes and talks to people because he is, I don't know, the one with the authority. And so he comes up and he's like, do you know about Jesus? And I was like, well, I'm a pastor, so I better. And then he proceeded to misreference and misquote the Bible at me, and I was like, okay. Nope, it was Elijah, not Jeremiah, but okay.
Yeah. Did you get any of the women shouldn't be pastors, of course, misgendering you and making assumptions about pastoralness all in one?
I actually did not. I did not. Wow, but I was like not in the space where I wanted to talk. One of my roommates loves to talk to folks that come, and she'll like go on the porch and she will just talk to the women, and she will plant all the seed of dissension with the women because she's also Christian, and so like speaks from a biblical perspective about the amazingness of women in the Bible. And yeah, it's, but she was not awake at the time, so I was like, okay, we'll leave her alone.
Ooh, okay, so I thankfully do not have a supernatural story. I can't handle that. So I would say it's more of an experience overall versus a moment. Mm-hmm. I didn't really grow up going to church as a kid. We went for like Easter and stuff like that. But then we got baptized as a family, and we would go regularly and go to Bible study, yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. As a young queer person, I did not find that to be that fun. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like an affirming church, which I did not know was even a thing back then. So having to try to hide, horribly by the way, hide the fact that I was gay from it at school, in the neighborhood, at home. And now I have another space I have to try to do this. And there's an added layer of spirituality with it. So it was tense, you know. Every Sunday I'm just like, I wonder what the sermon's gonna be about this week. Let's hope it's not about us. Yeah. So it was just a little frustrating. And then once I left the house, I was not going back unless it was a special occasion.
When I was in Slovakia, I didn't know the sermon included the word Sodom or Gomorrah. I didn't know much Slovak when I went, but definitely every time. Yeah, this is why I'm in the closet right now.
Obsessive. There are so many things to talk about.
Right? And even if you did talk about Sodom and Gomorrah, like, let's get into that, because that is not what you think it is. Yeah.
Oh, and it's, you can't even question anything. That's the other thing that drove me nuts. You can't question anything.
And I'm the type of person to question everything. Like, if it doesn't make sense to me, I would want you to tell me how it makes sense. Then maybe I can believe in it. But if you can't tell me, then
I can show you my phone. My mother will text me. She keeps trying. She's going to keep trying to get me to the other side. Text messages every day of, I mean, it's not like bad stuff. It's just scriptures here and there.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. I'm like, you haven't gotten it yet. But okay. I like that you're trying.
It's too late for you, Mike. You were texting me earlier about demons. So.
Twitter. There's like a tweet that somebody did. I mean, have you seen the, like, that, I have to find it. I saw it on Twitter, and then somebody sent it to me right after that. Pride Month.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, going from Pride Month, yes. And then you just make it shorter and shorter, and then it becomes a rainbow demon. And the best part is the dialogue that goes with it, right? Where, like, all of the, like, queerphobes, it's conservatives, haha, we owned them. Straight allies. That is so offensive. Stop attacking queer people. Actual queer people. Can I get this on a shirt?
I was about to say that. I was like, I want that on a shirt.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah. I would love that on a shirt. It would be 100%. Yeah. So good.
I love it.
Speaking of things that are actually ghosts, I don't know how to transition to Candyman, but recovering Nia DaCosta's Candyman came out in 2021. And we added this to our outline now, so we contextualize it both for our listeners, but also for it's Emily's really for benefit, because it helps them a place where the movie came out. So biggest blockbusters and horror movies of the year, Godzilla vs. Kong, Shang-Chi, Black Widow, Army of the Dead, Cruella, Fear Street Trilogy, Princess Switch. Emily would get that one.
I did. And on
Horror Nerds at Church, is the year we started in 2021. Mm. But also we covered Ghostbusters' S episode. Indeed. So what's your first experience both with this film but also the original, since they're so tied? Whoever would like to start.
I guess I'll go. So the original OG can... I was terrified of that film. We had a couple sleepovers, and obviously it's kind of like a Bloody Mary tale. You see the name in the mirror, he's gonna come after you, blah blah blah. Yep. So we were always scared of Candyman. Even to this day, as an adult, some of us still be like, I'm not gonna say it all the way, even mm-hmm. though we know it's fake, but it's just like yeah, shout out yeah. to Girl That Scary, they call him Sugar Man because they're not saying Candyman. So I like that. but that OG Candyman always terrified me. And it's not so much of it being a bloody or gory movie. It's for the fact of just the myth of Candyman. And when you see Tony Todd, he's like this this presence with the voice and the figure and just the way mm-hmm. he just sounds, and he hypnotizes you. It's, I don't know. But as a kid, the part that, sorry, y'all. As a kid, the part that got to me the most was the whole scene with the kid telling the story about the little boy getting his penis chopped off in the bathroom. That scared the hell out of me as a kid. And it was just how it was told, you know? But even the score, the music is just haunting. It's just everything about that movie just still send me chills to this day. And then with this new one, it was an experience watching this because, again, we were so hyped up from the old movie, and then the sequels we didn't really care for too much. So being as though this was going to be a spiritual sequel, I'm like, okay, it's going to be connected to the first one. It's going to be amazing. And I enjoyed it. We're going to get in more into it, but like my first viewing, I've seen this movie like 3 times in the theater, but my first viewing, I was just in awe. Like, I loved the movie overall.
Okay. Yeah. 3 times. Wow.
Yeah.
So I didn't remember the first movie. I actually watched the second one way more as a kid than the first movie.
Interesting.
So going back, the voice is haunting. His backstory is very, like, I don't know if I've heard of many villains were tortured that much in their right. backstory. So that, and then, you know, there was some confusion with the original. I didn't really understand all the rules because some people didn't say his name, but they ended up dead anyway. Mm-hmm. So it's just really confusing.
Yeah, yeah.
But I go along for the ride. The new one, I enjoyed it. I love the visuals. I wish there were some changes, which I guess we're going to get into at some point.
Sure, yeah.
But I did enjoy it.
Our listeners get to take two drinks, two shots this time, because not only was the first time I watched this movie for this show, but also we watched the original as a movie commentary, so that will probably have already come out by the time this comes out. So I watched the original for this podcast and then Nia DaCosta's version for this episode of this podcast. And I think I'm at the point where, like, if Jordan Peele is involved in it, I'm there. This was my first movie with Nia DaCosta, by Nia DaCosta, and it was fantastic. And so, like, I will also be following Nia DaCosta, but, like, this is repeatedly, every time I've seen something with Jordan Peele, it's been phenomenal, and so I'm here for it.
Weird for me, so you don't have to take a shot, listeners, is I did not see this movie until college. Mm. I don't know why it was in the... I missed a lot of, like, 90s horror now, because that's when my mom started to care about whether or not I watched horror movies. Like, she didn't until I was, like, about 10, and then she started caring, and I wasn't allowed to watch it until I was 18. It's this weird phase of my life. But, yeah, so it's one of the ones I missed, and I didn't see it till college. But when I saw it in college, I saw it with a friend whose favorite, believe it or not, her favorite Candyman is the third one, because it's set in New Orleans, and she loves New Orleans. Huh. So that's the only reason it's their favorite, I'm pretty sure. But, like, but anyway, we had, like, a marathon of that, the throwback. But then I saw this one in theaters. It was one of the ones I was really wanting to see, and they had released the shadow puppet scene, like, as a teaser early on. So I remember went to theaters, saw it in theaters, and overall liked it. A little behind the scenes. So the original movie, as many people know, was based on Clive Barker's short story, The Forbidden, about a woman named Helen who photographs graffiti in London and learns about the urban Akari. So in their original film, Bernard Rose moved the setting to Chicago, which I think really fabric of this 92, written and directed by a white guy, so there's obviously issues there, especially because race is plays such a prominent role in the but it's since become a classic and beloved slasher. You all might have some suggestions here too, but I'll put in a show notes Horror Queers episode with Brother Ghoulish, also known as Ryan W. They go in parts that were great and some of the...
Yeah, they do their research, so absolutely check out Brother Ghoulish and Horror Queers. We don't do that much. We're like, this feels weird.
Like, we try to. Like, we try to, and
I mean,
we fall off.
That's also like an entire lifetime of research goes into the, this doesn't feel right.
Yep. But I know you all have mentioned the film before and the remake, both in your top 10 horror of 2021. I know Candyman was up there, and our favorite black horror and our favorite characters episodes. I'll link those in the show to talk about Candyman. As I said, there are two sequels. They both kind of sucked. Farewell to the Flesh in 95 and Candyman Day of the Dead in 99. Sorry to my friend JR, who loves Candyman Day of the Dead. But the character is popular enough that there are rumors of a Candyman versus Hellraiser film, since both are based on Clive Barker stories. Which might be interesting, I don't know. But then there's Candyman versus Leprechaun, which Tony Todd himself stepped in and was like, I am not going to do it if you go that way. I have too much respect for the character. So I'm glad that never happened.
You know, as a kid, I probably would have enjoyed that. And I was like, yeah, give it to us. But now, just no.
Good call.
Right. How would that even work? I'm like trying to
right? Those worlds are so different. Like, I don't understand.
I don't know
anything. Leprechaun's been in space, so.
Okay. I was like, I don't know anything about Leprechaun, but I imagine it takes place, like, St. Patrick's Day in Chicago actually seems like a good setting for a crossover.
Well, it could be a spinoff of Leprechaun in the Hood, because he does go to the Hood eventually, so they could segue into the whole Cabrini Green situation with Candyman, and there you go.
He goes there twice.
I don't hate these ideas, actually.
I love it.
I'm just, you know, the water turns green. Everybody gets super drunk. Drunk white people. That's enough of a, like,
horrifying.
Like, that's enough of a setting for a horror story. Yes. And then you add in.
But would they be fighting over, though? Yeah. Like, leprechaun. Yeah. I mean, did Candyman steal leprechaun's gold? Like, what?
Or did leprechaun steal Candyman's candy?
Did Candyman start giving out chocolate coins? And leprechaun was like, those are my coins. Right. And then, I don't know. I love that I can participate in this knowing nothing about Leprechaun. Had no idea that there was like a space version.
But you're on track, though. You're like on par with everything. So
it is the most ridiculous series. So don't worry. We will cover Leprechaun in like season 59 of our podcast, I'm sure. Like leading up for all 8 movies in that franchise.
Oh, I was going to say, it could be one of our mini-sodes. We'll just do Leprechaun-based movies.
Y'all should.
No, there's
and it needs to be sooner. It needs to be way sooner because I need to listen.
Those go so weird. I love it. Jennifer Aniston was in one.
Oh.
The first one.
Yeah.
So.
All right. I'm intrigued now. So.
Yep.
All right.
Hellraiser also goes to space, so that seems like more of a fit for Leprechaun Hellraiser shit.
I can see Candyman and Pinhead because they're kind of similar in some ways, but not no Leprechaun. But I'm there. If it gets produced in May, I'm there.
Right. Yeah. I'll still watch.
Right. Well, after all those movies were rightly so, perhaps, in development hell and not going anywhere, Jordan Peele, of course, changed the horror scene with Get Out. And so news pretty quickly came that his studio was going to... And so I already mentioned the Shadow Puppets. That was...
Which are so good.
So good.
I love Shadow Puppets. Puppet cutouts in when it's like not animated and then they cut to like a story or a legend or a memory and it's all shadow puppets. They're so good.
Right. But the shadow puppets are created by Chicago-based puppet theater Manuel Cinema. Think it's Manuel Cinema unless it's a typo and it's supposed to be you would think I'd research more on this, but
I get it.
That's for the post production when I edit out whichever version is the wrong version and just keep the one that was the right one.
There you go. I was gonna say my background research for this one was the original one, watching it. So
yeah,
you know.
See, the working title though of the movie was "Say My Name," which then was kept as the tagline. And it wasn't clear originally if it would be a remake or a sequel, and if Tony would appear, but thankfully a sequel, and Tony, even if it's originally scheduled for June 2020, but pushed back because of COVID to 21. It was released to positive, to mixed reviews. Most of the positive was they loved the comment on the original film. The conversation around gentrification and the negative was it's not scary. There's kind of a jumbled message. Of course, you have the, it's too preachy when a horror with a message.
Or not preachy, but woke. Because that's everybody's favorite word when it's referring to black film.
I can understand not scary because I didn't find it to be scary, but I still enjoyed the movie. But like the woke aspect of it, it irritates the hell out of me because I'm like, it's not like this is far-fetched. I mean, minus the Candyman aspect. But the backstories are not far-fetched at all.
And people forget too that like the first movie, yes, the first movie was scary, but they talk a lot about race and you know, like Candyman's just not walking around like Jason or Michael Myers slashing people up. Like there's a whole reason why he's doing this. So people forget that aspect because throughout the years they just like, oh well, top villains, Michael Myers, Jason, Freddy, Candyman. But when you actually watch that movie, it's a whole different situation there, and same thing with this one, you know.
I did not read any of the reviews obviously, but I like the, and I think I kind of got into this, so this is maybe a good segue into the like walk roll through the film, but there I really appreciated the ways that DaCosta like flipped the script and also provided continuity, right? So there's like, there's actual flipping of things, right? Where the things, Pace had to point it out because I did not notice because I was a little bit distracted at the very beginning. The mirroring of all of the, like production company things. I did notice the roar of the lion while also playing the like kids song Candyman, and I was like, that is disturbing in a way I did not expect. But also the flipping the script, right, of like looking at Chicago from below, from the ground up, and those sorts of things that like flip the script and who's centered in the story, whereas like the original story centers Helen, the white woman, and then this story centers on Anthony, who was in the original, like, not obviously not the same actor, but who was in the original movie, and like what his, like, both of them go into trances at different points, but she goes into a trance and like maybe probably kills people, maybe, we're not sure, I don't know, unclear, and he goes into a trance and he paints, and there's just like those different places where like the script gets flipped and then the script is also like consistent, where the story of Candyman is a lynching in both. It's not like, so when I was watching, I was like, yeah, there's a different way that it's portraying it, but it's not preaching about or talking about racism, and the other one didn't. Like, the other one was rooted in like literally a lynching.
Yeah. Right. I would argue. I'm sorry.
No, please go ahead.
I was thinking that the cop aspect probably rubbed some people because they didn't really touch on police in the other movie.
Yeah.
But this was like a pretty heavy part of a certain storyline in this. And I think that probably rubbed a certain group of people the wrong way. And they just immediately were like, this is not what I signed up for.
I think that's a lot of it. And I also think a lot of it is kind of what you're saying too, Emily, about centering of, I feel like anytime somebody other than a white protagonist, that's when it gets called woke a lot. But it is a very ACAB movie, and I'm all,
which we have discovered that many horror films are. Right? There was one that we watched recently that was like, didn't really take a position on police, but most of them are like, the police are completely incompetent. And this one is like, not just the police are incompetent, right? But a whole lot more of the reality of police in this country.
And I feel like they could have done the police, like the police thing in this movie, like a lot worse. They did it really tastefully. They just applied. I say tastefully because some movies go there with showing violence towards black people, like seeing, like you actually see.
Yeah.
You know, violence straight up. You just hear it. You don't see it. It's in the background. That's all they leave it just as that. You know. So you can't even say that it's like in your face. Really, they just apply it.
It's one of the stunning things that Nita Costa did, which I think on the one hand, the trade-off is it isn't as scary, but like she really goes out of her way to make sure the violent people is depicted large often, which I just think is such a potentially like healing thing compared to the way black trauma is usually depicted on most other films.
Look at y'all. I didn't even notice that.
I didn't notice that either, but
For a second, I was like, did any black people die in this? And then I remembered the scenes. I was like, but now that you mentioned it being off screen, I didn't even put two and two together.
And I have to go back. A lot of people were saying, oh, well, Candyman is only going after white people. No, he went after a black person in this movie, too. Sherman went after the kid.
Yep.
What's his name? Sister. I forgot his name, but his sister in the bathroom. Yeah, William's sister.
William's.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm going to need him to explain why he's doing what he's doing before he kills me, because I'm still confused.
Right. Like, what are the rules? I don't understand.
I thought he was going after just white people, too, and I was like, all right, I'm here for it. Like, the girls in high school, I think there's one of them that's, like, maybe Asian as well. But they, like, actually summon him, right? Like, there's a little bit of, like, okay, I understand why you're getting killed if you're getting summoned by the Candyman. Or if you're summoning the Candyman, but... Yeah. I hadn't noticed who was killed on screen and off screen. I noticed that you couldn't see who was killing them, and I was like, oh, this is like Nightmare on Elm Street, where, like, you just see the effects of this person who is in people's heads.
I did like that a little bit. Like, the more I watched this film, like, that was, like, one of the things I didn't care for as much, but then it grew on me, and I'm like, you know what, this is a little different, because it's still kind of like a mystery. Like, a lot of the scenes, you just, it's this figure, not even a figure, you just don't know, it's this invisible force killing people, and you're just like, okay, and you only can see Candyman through the mirror. And I love the fact that in this version too, he also levitates. A lot of people thought that was corny, but I loved it. I'm like, I'm levitating, and it just like a slow, smooth, like, just guide, like, not guide, but gliding across the room. I loved it. So I want to see more of that, and I feel like it was just like blue balls for me, because I wanted to see more of it. The only cut so much away in this movie, and not to jump too far ahead, but what I mean by cut is just like when they're just getting into like the nitty gritty when they're doing the kills, in one particular scene inside the art gallery, that pissed me off because I wanted to see that guy just get like, he just screams and then it just cuts away, and I'm like, okay, I don't care if we don't see Candyman actually do it. I just want to see blood splatter. I want to see guts falling.
Yeah,
I'm trying to remember what. I don't remember what it was rated. I'm wondering if that has something to do.
Yeah, it's R.
Oh, is it? Oh, no excuse then. Sorry. No, let's So the reflection, seeing him in a reflection is interesting. There were points I noticed this watch I didn't notice the first time around. Like, I didn't notice him in certain scenes, a specific reflection, which I liked.
Yeah, there were times that I was like, wait, I can't. I watch scary movies during the day most of the time still, because it's just safer that way. But my screen doesn't always fully account for that. And so there were times where I was like, wait, is that... I think one time I actually paused the movie to try to see if it was, if Candyman was in the mirror or not. But yeah, I liked that it, the like in and out kind of appearing and not appearing.
I have two big thoughts about the movie. First is, watching the first time, it was, I knew that Tony Todd was back because by then it was in the news and stuff, but seeing Sherman Fields as a Candyman for like the first half of the movie before they start bringing more of Daniel Robitaille's story in was really looking for, like, confusing, but like in a good way. Like, it kept the mystery going and like, what is going on here, because they're taking such care of the first film and you know Tony Todd's gonna be in it, but like, what is the connection here? And I love how that kind of plays out in the film, and then with the Hive legend and all that stuff. And then the other thing that's kind of related is the film is just kind of, the only criticism I really have of the movie is just it's kind of incoherent at parts, because I feel like this movie's 90 minutes and I feel like it should have been closer to 2 hours. The original is closer to 2 hours. It just feels like they're trying to fit too much into it, so it just feels like towards the end we're just like jumping person to person and not really following or connecting the dots or anything.
I agreed. They showed some scenes in a trailer that's not even in a movie, which I was also pissed about, because that goes to the jumping, the part where Brianna comes in and she see, like, when she comes into the art gallery and she finds the dead bodies, there was more of a longer screen in her running away and in a movie that was like non-existent, and I'm just like, well, what happened to that scene? I should know. I watched the trailer like 200 times because I was so excited. And it just, again, the scene with, you know, her father, that was kind of annoying, because I'm just like, okay, you told this story and you touched on it briefly, but what, like, it doesn't connect to anything really, you know? So it is a lot of jumping around, and I was hoping that, well, maybe we'll get a director's cut when the Blu-ray come out or the DVD. So I was excited. I said, maybe there's a director's cut, because this movie is only like an hour and 20 something minute, probably an hour 30. But I thought, oh, maybe it'll be a longer film, and it's not. It's the deleted scenes we get is like the ones that we're not looking for, I should say. So
yeah,
I was a little disappointed.
Yeah. It's a missed opportunity. Yep. To your point, I thought they could have touched on Brianna's storyline with her father more.
Yeah,
I was like, is it intentional that his sweater is the same color as Sherman's coat? Like, why are we doing this? I need to know something.
Yeah.
Also, I kind of think it's an attention span thing. Mm. Because the movie that came out in the 90s, maybe we had more patience. I don't know. But if you think about it, we didn't see Candyman for like half the movie. They were just talking about him throughout most of it. This one, I felt like they knew people are going to want to see Candyman, so we need to kind of just get him in there, get him killing people. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of, not ruined it, but there were some aspects I wish they would have delved into instead of focusing so much on us visually seeing him.
You're right. Like, that first one, you're right. We didn't see Candyman for like 30 minutes or so, but that made him much more scary because they talking about him. It's like this lead up to this, you know, this myth, you know, this legend. And then when we finally get there, he serves. And I think it I think that's what I think a lot of people was expecting in this movie too. And again, it just didn't hit. And it, like you said, there's so many missed opportunities. I wish they could have done, like, they could have played so much more with the whole reflection thing, with the mirror. They could have done more with that. Yeah, the blood, like again, a lot of it is happening off screen. I would like to see some kills happen on screen, except for the one kill that we've seen with the journalist.
The reporter,
and we get that shot. That's, like, one of my favorite scenes, and the camera is panning back. And you just see her lifted up and then, like, smashed on the glass and then dragged and then, like, and then cut. And I'm just like, I love this. That's amazing. I want more of this. And
And so I don't know what, like, qualifies a movie as a slasher movie versus not a slasher movie. Because this one is classified as a slasher movie. And I think my experience of slasher movies... I don't know if I have any experience, Pace knows, with slasher movies. I don't know if Nightmare on Elm Street actually counts as a, like, slasher movie. Okay.
It is.
Okay, so the, like, ways that I experience slasher movies where I'm like, okay, and what I experienced last season with Nightmare on Elm Street was, like, after a certain point, you're just like, okay, everybody's just getting killed, and you're just doing the same thing over and over and over again. And I didn't experience it with this movie in that way, but I did experience the missing plot links that y'all are talking about with, like, particularly with Brianna's dad and those places of, like, we see him sitting on the window and then it cuts away. And then there's, like, another scene with him on the window and he's like, look, I can fly. Don't ever tell a kid that you can fly and then jump out the window and die. Like, No, not the thing.
That makes me want to go into, like, also, like, this movie does want to touch on a lot of things. Because I feel like maybe that was, like, a mental health thing. Maybe her father was mentally ill. But we don't know that because they didn't really touch on it, you know? Like, we don't know if he was going through depression or anything.
Yeah, and especially with Candyman out there, like, you don't know who's in his head.
Right. I think this is one of the examples where this would have served better as a series versus this movie. Because, especially with the Hive aspect, they could have focused on so many different characters versus just quickly throwing, well, this Sherman for half of the movie. We don't really know him like that. And then Tony Todd pops in at the end randomly. And then we have Anthony as Candyman at one point. Like, a series would have just been better and they could have explored more.
I agree. They could have done so much.
Is there going to be another movie?
You know, not anything's been announced that I've seen. I don't know if y'all have seen it.
I mean, I hope so, because, like, even though, like, this movie got a lot of mixed reviews, I am curious to see more, you know, especially with the ending that we got when we get Tony Todd and he said, tell everyone. I would like to see, not necessarily him come back, but I would maybe like to see Anthony come back as a Candyman, or maybe focus on a different person. Not too sure if we want to go through that trauma again with another black man being killed. And but, like, I wouldn't mind to see Anthony as Candyman because I like this new design. They want to do something different from Tony Todd. So I like the beehive on the one side of his face with the cloudy eye. And, like, I like this version of Candyman. I feel like a new generation, this would be awesome.
Mike is not here.
But it's dope. Like, it's an interesting design, you know? Yeah. And I would, this is an opportunity to give the newer generation nightmares if they do it right.
Yeah. I think it would be interesting to focus on Troy. Is his name Garrett? Mm-hmm. His partner?
Yes.
I think focusing Brianna. On those two and even Brianna, because mm-hmm. I'm wondering, okay, all these dead cops are here. Who else can they blame but her?
Right? Right?
This can't be Candyman.
That was, so, like, as she's walking away, I was like, okay.
Is she going to be arrested for that?
Yeah.
And that's part of the thing that I feel like is a little bit jilting in the film, is how it starts following Anthony for the first three quarters of the movie, and then really it's only the last quarter that it really becomes. And I would have almost loved to have seen it entirely from Brianna's point of view, especially like as she's seeing her partner become more increasingly erratic.
I love that.
Weird behavior and stuff like that. So.
No, I love that. Yeah. There is a deleted scene where after the event, she goes on with, you know, her gallery thing, and they talk about Anthony for a little bit. So I don't know how she got away scot-free with everything, but there is a deleted scene where after the fact, she goes on with her life.
Also, Trina in the bathroom. I'm assuming they're going to think she killed those girls in the bathroom.
Right? Yeah. The, like, oh.
I'm like, you're not helping me, Sherman.
You're supposed to be helping me, but you're not.
Yeah. Well, and that would be such an amazing, like, teasing apart and digging more deeply into. Because, right, this is rooted in, if we're keeping it rooted in Chicago and in all of the ways that Chicago and racism and cops, like, especially with, like, soon to be former Mayor Lightfoot, who's literally a cop, and, like, I think there's so much that you could do in Chicago and with the, like, It's not that, like, it's an out of the frying pan into the fire, right? Like, Brianna says Candyman and summons him. And why does she summon him? To save herself from getting killed by these cops who are getting ready to kill her if she will not capitulate to their story that they just made up to protect their asses. And then she walks away and you know she's going to get in trouble. But, like, is that trouble and delaying the trouble for just a little bit in the hopes that, like, I don't know, you can show up at the police station and not get killed? Right. But that's not guaranteed. Like, right, like,
yeah. Oh, they...
or you can that escape.
That happens in the
or,
second
like...
one, right?
Yes. So it's not too crazy because there's a storyline where the main character's brother is being blamed for a murder that Candyman committed, so they could try to go that route. Maybe she's trying to defend herself as much as she possibly can in that situation.
It's really,
but that would be very interesting.
Would be crazy. Yeah. It would be like the Halloween Kills of, like, the new Candyman trilogy, because it would just be just ongoing violence. If this continued, see, I would like that if they continue, like, right where this left off and just continue. That would have been dope.
Yeah. If they give David Gordon Green enough money to make a Halloween trilogy,
I think he's about to say, hey, David Gordon, I'm about to say, he's not allowed to touch this.
No. They can work together. They can work together.
I'm okay.
Yeah, I'm good with that. Yeah. I guess we can get into our deep dive. We're already kind of touching some of this stuff, but one thing, just kind of as a transition, that I am glad that they did not do is, I love the use of bees this movie, especially obscuring Tony Todd's face and then, like, as it transforms and stuff like that. But I am so glad there is not a bee making out scene like there was in the original. Gave me such the creeps.
I kind of wanted that, though. It was kind of.
Did you? Oh, I don't think I did.
That was kind of hot.
Bees in the mouth.
Like.
Listeners are missing out on, like, the visual of your
look.
Oh, our reactions, Mike.
always with him.
Look, no.
He wants to. It's always the demons, the ghosts.
First of all, no. Last time I was here, we were talking about Sparkle Cum from Twilight. So,
yes, we were.
That's right.
So,
Came up.
So, yeah.
There's a whole episode on it, Mike.
Bobby's just announcing he's a monster fucker, and
here we are. But I think that was, I think that's kind of hot. But to go back to your point with the bees, I like what they did with this too, because this is something so small, but it's like a sound design thing. It's like when the bees are on the other side of the mirror, it's just like the little tapping on the glass.
The tap.
Yes, I just love that.
Just like the tap in like the sequel that. Oh my gosh, you could make that so creepy.
Yes.
Like, to have that, we're here collectively creating, right? Like, that could be the thing if we're, like, delaying when Candyman shows up, just like that tap tap. You could get such a good jump scare out of that. I would be, like, out of my seat. Okay.
Yep.
I can do that. I did like that it was a hive and not a congregation. Because that was the whole, like, that whole churchy thing. Pace and I talked about it some while we were watching.
The churchy thing.
It was just
I missed that.
Weird. And then as you pointed it out, Pace, but, like, it changes from, like, the black man as, like, the savior figure of Candyman to the white woman. And I was like, we have done enough whitewashing of saviors in Christianity. Oh, yeah, we do mural, not need to do this in Candyman, too.
I forgot about that, the mural. Mm-hmm.
That's what I kind of liked in the beginning of this movie when they were, like, telling the story. It, like, it was painted as Helen being the monster, the villain, you know? But that also goes to show, too, like, gossip and rumors. When people keep telling stories over and over again, the story changes and keep evolving. And it turns into, like, something way different than what actually happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love it. Like, imagine, the rules we think about Freddy Krueger don't apply. Somebody just messed it up. The rules we think about Jason or Michael Myers, they just lost in translation at this point over time. I would actually kind of like it if they did this to so many different horror villains.
Yeah.
I also really like that. Like, it's part of the, like, shifting and yet still congruent. Like, we know it's from the same story. We've all heard the same story repeated at different time points in somebody's life. And you're like, I see that that is the same story. And also, I see that that is not the same way you told it last time.
There was actually something I did just thought about. The first movie, there's like an eroticism that there just is not in this at all. Which I'm sure Clive Barker, so that makes sense. Yeah. In the other movie, why that would be there. But I liked it. I liked his voice. I liked him or Helen being in a trance. This one, I actually agree it should have been from Brianna's perspective, and you kind of just have him going through what he's going through.
Mm-hmm.
It just would have made more sense.
Yeah, the first one was definitely more like a love story, but I enjoyed it, like a fucked up love story. Because he's after her the whole entire time, you know? That's all he wants. And she's like, who the fuck are you? But I'm in it. Like, I want to do it, but I'm not too sure who you are. Like, I know you can lay down the pipe, but you're a monster. So just like, I don't know. So Helen was a little unsure, but she finally gave in at the end. Listen,
sting me,
here
Candyman,
we go.
Sting me.
I'm sure she was not in a trance when she did that whole mouth-to-mouth with the bees. She was wide awake. She was fine.
Oh,
and she was into it. He was into it just as much as I would be. So,
if he kept the coat closed, maybe. But I can't physically see that and kiss you. Like, no.
But, you know, if they redid that today, they would have done, like, CGI bees. It would not have been nearly as good as the original with the real bees and however much thousands of dollars was in Tony Todd's
like
contract for every bee.
$360,000 here.
I loved it.
Just from getting bees. Yep. He had like,
I'll do that.
Pace said it was like $10,000 per bee sting.
Let's go.
Or something like that. It was amazing.
Also, like, I don't know how you get stung by a bee 36 times and you don't end up allergic. Like, it just.
He probably lied about some of them. He probably hit like a mosquito bite and was like, here's a bee sting.
Go camping over the weekend, come back. Oh, I got all these bee stings on Monday. I don't know.
right. Ugh. I don't know how to transition that because we're having so much fun, but I guess we can talk about some of the woke, I say in quotation marks, big scare quotes here, conversations that the film has about, like, some of it happens on screen in between characters talking about gentrification, race, and I really love that description that Anthony comes back at the critic about the ways that
it's created.
Like, very much intentionally created by the way these put together, as opposed to this thing that arts, and another thing, people blame queer people, like, gentrifying neighborhoods and stuff too, and really it's like you're putting your marginalized die.
I just had this conversation recently because in the gayborhood where I'm at, you know, it's called the gayborhood, and everybody's welcome, of course, but there's one club where it's just nothing but straight people now, and it's still marketed as a gay club, but I'm just like, literally, like, just straight people. And then if the moment, like, you know, there's gay people there too, but the moment somebody get a little too handsy or grabby, they're like, oh man, I'm not a, and I'm not just saying that's okay because you shouldn't be touching anybody, but at the same time, it's just like,
hell no.
No, it's not okay. It's not okay, but that does happen, you know what I mean? Like, it does happen. So it's just,
there's a bar. I was just gonna say, there's a bar in the Twin Cities. I think you've been to it, Pace, the 90s one. The gay bar that's like the 90s.
Oh, I have not I have not been there for reasons. Probably similar to what you're about to
say. It is the place to go for your bachelorette party.
Yeah, the gay 90s bar.
The gay 90s. Is called gay 90s. It is for bachelorette parties. It is not.
The bar I'm talking about, that's where it's becoming. Yeah. Every time you go in there, somebody's celebrating, them about to be married, and I'm just like,
because it's the only place that, like, cis women feel safe to dance, because which is also, like, a whole other thing, because there's a whole lot of, like, cis gay men who feel like proprietary ownership over women's bodies still, but that is, like, how it happened, right? Like, oh, they're not going to sexually objectify my body, so I feel safe there, so I can just go there and dance. And also, I can go there and my boyfriend or fiance won't feel threatened because they're all gay. They're not going to try and have sex with me. So it's way better than a strip club.
Not so much anymore, because, like I said, the straight guys is even going. So they're finding their way.
I blame Drag Race. I blame RuPaul for this.
Don't do that.
RuPaul. Fracking and turning. The two things we hate about RuPaul's fracking, his fracking empire, and then his turning gay bars into bachelorette clubs.
I'm playing Ru. I'm playing.
But yeah, the whole gentrification thing is, like, it's true. You know, it's facts. It's everywhere we go that's happening. You know, and you know, there's I can name at least a handful of places in my city that's happening in. So, I mean, I get it. And it's a shame because sometimes, like, these people are left to, like, they left nowhere to go. They're left homeless or they're struggling. So it's sad.
I think when people talk about gentrification, when they're like, oh, it's amazing and all, like, yeah, you're getting, like, first of all, a Starbucks and Whole Foods and shit, like, I get it. They have some good stuff, but same time, like, that's not what people need in those areas. And I think about also culturally, you, for example, if you move to New York, for example, and you're not used to being around crowds of people, and you're not used to people screaming and yelling and all sorts of mess on the train, that probably is not the place for you. You may need to move somewhere else. And to just assume it's a clash of cultures as well, versus just only pushing people out when you come in there.
And that's, like, so I took, when I was in seminary, I took Urban Peacemaking in a Culture of Violence, and part of what we talked about in it was the different levels of violence that, for the most part, particularly in media coverage, the only violence we talk about is, like, the third level of violence, right? Which is when people have experienced so much violence that they push back and there's property destruction, and then you get the, like, backlash of, like, police violence, crackdown stuff. But we don't talk about the underlying causes of that are actually violence, but we don't talk about impoverishing communities as an act of violence. We don't talk about I-90, which is built just west of Cabrini Green, as violence cutting up the communities in Chicago. We don't, like, we don't name those violences, which is what the movie gets at, is like, it's not the first level of violence is not gentrification. It is not a good thing, and it is a complicated thing, but it's not the first level of violence. The first level of violence is tearing apart this whole community, is the segregation, and is the under-policing and over-policing and just policing in general. Mm-hmm. But, like,
yes. Yeah. Make a boogeyman, mm-hmm. and then redline, yep. and so everybody wants to be separated.
And then you respond, and, like, I think it was William Burke in the movie was, like, talking about the police, and he's like, are they keeping us safe or keeping us in?
Yep.
Mm. Yeah.
I noticed that the first scene, I didn't pick this up, he was doing shadow puppets yep. himself as a kid, reenacting a moment with cops, and I guess him himself, or just any other black person that was there. And it didn't, because I will say his motive, I was like, I get it. But you're also doing some fucked up shit.
And he said that. To happen. He said it.
Like, yes. And I was kind of just like, it could also happen naturally. I don't know if you need to be doing.
I guess it had to happen for, I guess, the community to understand. Because he even said it when Brianna was there. He was like, I guess I'm on some other shit now. That, all right. So a lot of people don't like William Burke, but I actually like him in the movie, especially at the end when he just loses his mind. Like, his demeanor changed, his voice changed, just everything. And he just gave me my whole life. Also, he's a black queer man in real life from Philadelphia. So I was like, oh, we got a brother from my city. That's queer.
Well, there we go. That explains it. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Don't chill, wine is sweet. I just love that line. I'm sorry. It's so good. But I would say Burt, like, so when Anthony is, like, you know, I guess transforming into the new Kenny, like, I could understand why people were confused on how and why he was doing this. Because when I first watched it, too, I'm just like, okay, like, do you really need to do this? Like, is there any other way you can do this, you know, rather than... And then it also had me thinking, is there levels to become a Candyman? Like, it seemed like it was a bunch of things to...
Right? You need a witness. Mm-hmm. He mentioned, I have a witness here. I guess apparently you need white people of some sort of in this scenario. Because he knew to call the cops. And you have to cut off an arm.
And replace it with...
Because the whole thing, Anthony seemed like he was in a trance. Like, even when he was in pain, it seemed like he couldn't vocalize that.
Yeah. And something else I was confused by, Daniel Robitaille had the whole bee situation, but they all seem to be able to have bees around them. Sherman, like, bees had nothing to do with him. So it's almost like all of their traumas can be combined and almost be their powers. I guess
that's the meaning of the hive.
Our powers combined.
Come on.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, our powers. Yes.
We need a live action. We need a live action.
Yeah.
Captain Planet.
Yes.
Did you ever see, I think it was College Humor that did this with Don Cheadle playing
sketch?
It is so funny. Well, I'll have to make sure we link that in the show notes. But that was great.
Oh my god, yes.
From Captain Planet.
Yeah.
I'm surprised we haven't gotten a live
and you guys have to watch that immediately.
After all this time.
It's because then people is like mired in the stress and anxiety of late stage capitalism and we're all going to die.
That's a good
but
point.
Might That's actually good point. Start caring about the environment again. Mm-hmm. It's like if we repopularize Captain Planet, then we get not only all of our generation that like grew up on Captain Planet and now also Gen Z. And Gen Z will tear this shit down because there already are. Like, it's too dangerous for corporations to have another Captain Planet.
I'm too so dangerous. Mad, but you're right. Good point, you're good so point. Correct.
And it would be called woke. It would be called woke. Absolutely. 100%.
And I'm like, Captain woke. Planet. Woke.
There's just no end to this. Everything is woke at this point. There's no end. I guarantee you, two queer people be in this movie. Oh, it's woke. Oh right. My god. Like, you existing is too much for me in anything.
Do you know so that in all of, you know how all the books are getting banned, right? Mm-hmm. Also, fun fact, this is totally random and not related except for wokeness. Did you know, right? 11 people, 11 individual people are the ones responsible for the majority of the book bans in the country.
Exactly. Like they're sifting through the books, just the 11 people?
Like they are the ones petitioning to
the libraries and school districts.
People.
Take me away from here. So, just transport me.
I just found that out today, and so I had to share it with somebody because that's its own goal based off of work that somebody else has been doing for a couple years on trying to track book bans. On horror. Everything is horror. Somebody just, Washington Post, I think, just did an article. Only three of the names were public out of the 11.
It's so frustrating. I need Independence Day to happen. Mm-hmm. I need it.
At this point. The movie. Just bring it in. Yeah. I love it. And Jeff Goldblum, too.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Two quick theology things I want to make sure to mention, though, is number one is the trauma and theology of place. This just keeps coming up again and again in the movie cover. Starting with Nightmare on Elm Street, weirdly, with Nancy's house just showing up again and again and again for no reason. But in this one, it's like Cabrini Green is almost a character in and of itself in the way that the two films intentionally, like Nia DaCosta is going into Cabrini with a different lens. As opposed to this white outsider coming in and seeing it through her eyes as now we're seeing it as the people who actually grew up there and lived there and made their lives there. All that. So love that. And also the ways that place can hold on to trauma and then it's kind of our work of
which is like in Ghost, in the like ghost tracking, right? Like haunted houses and stuff. We have our house that I live in is a 100-year-old plus row home in Maryland, in Baltimore. And one of my housemates went down, and she's a queer black woman, and she went down into the basement and was like, nope, not good. Because there's like a thing at the back that's like, this was either like Underground Railroad type things or something. Right, like best spin on it is Underground Railroad because there's an escape hatch out the back, like out the floor of the back, but like she was just like no, and but like when Brianna did it, there is so much real truth there if we talk to Indigenous people about land and
I'm place cracking up because you said no, and, like Brianna did that in this movie too.
Right, I love that scene.
I was like, we just rewatched Nope because we're gonna record because that's our next movie, and I was like, perfect.
But that is very interesting that you said like certain things and places do hold trauma and certain type of energy.
Right.
I was about to go just.
And you don't know everything that happened in every place.
Like there was a place near my mom's house where, and again, I'm not too sure if everybody believes in ghosts and, you know, entities and spirits and stuff like that. But like, I always wondered like this place near my mom's house, some like three people had gotten killed there and it was been vacant forever. And I no longer live with my mom, Ops. So one day I was visiting her and I seen like a whole family just moving in that exact house. So I'm just like in my head, like, do they know that three people killed there? Right.
Get out.
And then also it's just like, I want to know if they're still there now. And then also it's like, are they experiencing anything in there? Because three people died there tragically, you know? So, and I'm a firm believer, if somebody dies somewhere tragically, your energy is stuck there.
So Bobby knows this. I'm from Amityville. So I'm from the Amityville Horror House mess. Not near the house, maybe like 5 minutes away. But I always wonder, like, why are there people living here? Because those people actually were murdered, whether it was supernatural or not, they were actually murdered. And there's always somebody living there. There's always people trying to find the house. Granted, they probably could make money if they like made it a haunted house during Halloween, but that's aside from the point. I have wondered, like, Is there a presence there that they feel? Is it worth it to get a cheaper house? I don't know. But it freaks me out a little bit.
Yeah.
It really does. You probably should be doing research on house if I move somewhere.
Like the Zillow listing and make sure it's vetted.
They said that it was ghost proofed.
I asked that when I moved, like when I moved to apartments and stuff, and when I moved into a place in here, I asked that, like, did anything happen here? Just look, you never know.
I thought you were going to say you asked.
Well, pretty much. Yeah. Like, I don't say it along those lines, but like, well, I don't want to live somewhere where something like that happened. Like, that's scary to me.
But you're the demon fucker, right? So don't you want to live in a place like that? You can find yourself a demon man.
All right, so I'm gagging. Who's to say that they're a demon? They're just a spirit, you know? You know what? We're not gonna go there. Cause I'm gonna sound crazy. So
I do think like we're also approaching the place in like the trajectory of human history on this continent, and in buildings like that still stand on this continent, where like, is there a house that has not experienced trauma in some capacity? Mm. Right? Like, there's like enslavement, which is a shit ton of all the houses, families, and like all of that stuff. Yeah. Like, I know I'm trying to sell like our households that are like more than a certain amount old, but then also add in like generational trauma and abusive. I was trying to sell a house that was inherited from an abusive parent, and like, are we gonna keep people, even if it's not for like whoever comes into the house after? But also, somebody did die in that house on hospice, but like, it was a terrible person. So like, we're not gonna keep that house, but that house could serve someone else, but it's not gonna serve us, because the way that place works is it is full of trauma triggers for particular plague. It's not a violent death, but also violence happens.
Yeah, like even that, even though it's not violent, I'm still, I don't know, just the fact that somebody like, right.
I don't even want to see any ghosts. Right. I don't care how you win. Please leave me alone.
Right? But like that, like, are there any houses unless they've been built?
Yeah.
Only new developments for Bobby and Mike.
Right, which is its own kind of problematic thing of like, we're only going to move into the new
Oh my God.
Suburbs or tear down the existing things, and then you still get the places. Kind of
touch on that, but it did not. But I thought that would have been a very interesting aspect to make, because this was set what 50s, maybe a decade before that. I don't know, but obviously it was around a time of like white flight and segregation, and black family moving into a town full of white people who did not want them there, and there was all the supernatural stuff happening. I thought it would have been interesting to make white supremacy in itself being evil entity versus it just being individual.
But we kind of almost had that with Lovecraft Country a little bit, you know, so it was just a little bit. And they were about to go that route in Lovecraft Country season 2. They were about to go that route, but then they X'd it.
They have the number of shows that they just cut off too early.
Black and brown people and queer people. You get one season. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. Well, and it used to be three, right? Like Hentified got 3 seasons.
And like Lovecraft, that was And it doesn't seem to matter how much people love the show. Like Lovecraft Country was so buzzy before it came out. As it was coming out, everybody was talking. Still got canceled.
It was an odd time.
Kendrick,
it was really odd.
You're setting it up for failure, and it was still fantastic, and you still cut it off. Like, right around Christmas, for a TV show about time traveling to a time period of enslavement.
I'm thinking of Watchmen from HBO, which was a great show. Yeah.
That was another buzzy one.
And, like, I remember the first episode, like, people were, like, calling it woke, of course. Because it takes place in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And, like, I guess these people just had never heard of what happened in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So they, like, people are either finding out about it or they thought they just made it up. So, and then they added a racial aspect to it, and then people kind of fell off and didn't want it, regardless of how much other people liked it.
Yeah.
I even like that Queer as Folk reboot is I'm okay with watching two or three more seasons. Everybody's different.
It's funny, Mike. You were my hit. A League of Their Own. A League of Their Own, yeah. Queer as Folk, like, you were in my hit with that one, though, because I actually enjoyed that. I mean, but I feel like it came out at a weird time, and then also wasn't being promoted as much as well, either. Like, I feel like they just threw it all at you, and was like, here you go. I feel like if it was on, maybe on, not Peacock, it was on Peacock, maybe like a Netflix, or maybe even Hulu, it probably would have better traction. But at that time, not everybody had Peacock, too, because Peacock was still kind of, like, growing and becoming, like, a big thing. It's not as popular as it is now. But, yeah, Queer as Folk was a good one. I actually enjoyed that one. Yeah.
A League of Their Own I loved. Wait, they canceled A League of Their Own?
I thought they did. Maybe they didn't yet.
You said yet.
I really don't want them to. Oh, you know it's going to happen. It's not my fault it's going to happen. Yeah.
Oh, man.
I was just going to say.
Okay, I'll go with Ben. Last thing I wanted to touch on was this great book, Cross the Lynching Tree by James Cone, who makes intentional connections between the Christ figure and lynching, both in ways that question redemption and can a source of trauma, is that even the role of trauma, questions. Mm-hmm. And it's just a phenomenal book, and the way in which now I'm blanking on his name. William, is that the guy's name?
William Burke?
The crazy man?
Yeah. Yes. William is setting up Candyman to be this salvific figure. I feel there's a lot of connection.
Yeah. I will second James Cone's The Cross and the Lynching Tree. James Cone, for those who are less familiar with Christian theologians, he is considered the father of Black liberation theology. So if you've ever heard God is Black, that is a term and like a whole theology that he helped to build. I read several of his books in college and seminary, and The Cross and the Lynching Tree was, I think, the last book that he wrote. And it was the one that actually ended with hope, which I like. Theological books by marginalized people do not have to end in hope. Like, categorically across the board, not a rule. You do not have to artificially create hope. And he didn't for some of his other books. Like, you could tell that he was just at a place where, like, no. But The Cross and the Lynching Tree, because he does such a good job of tying, as Pace said, the connection between can suffering ever be salvific? But also, like, there's this point at which he says, you cannot understand the cross without understanding lynching in the United States. And lynching cannot have meaning and like a larger purpose without being tied to the crucifixion. And it's like, it's really good. It's definitely like a Christian theology. But it's phenomenal. And it really gets at those questions that like, what is, like, to name even that lynching was entertainment, that the crucifixion was its own kind of entertainment, that like extrajudicial killings crucifixion and lynching were both extrajudicial killings and state sanctioned violence to put people in their place.
That just flabbergasted me.
And it's not super academic. It's
one of his less academic works. So such a great read.
It is worth reading a million times.
Another book that people may be more familiar with if they heard the name James Cone, but aren't in Christian circles as much, is Martin and Marika, A Dreamer, which is kind of the seminal work he wrote. I want to say like about 20 years ago on Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Jr. and basically comparing the two and really like pushing against a lot of like America framed the differences between that's another.
Mm-hmm.
He died what?
I don't know. It feels really recent, but we've had a pandemic, and so I have no sense of time. But
Same. I'm definitely going to see if I can find that on Hoopla.
Yes. Yeah.
That's a library app.
Yep. Yeah. I hope that you can. If you cannot find it, tell me. I will, like, mail it to you. Love it. Because it is, there's, like, a handful of books that I, like, recommend without equivocation. I'm like, yes, please. And that is one of the, like...
Yeah.
Yeah, like, that is deep. Mm-hmm. Like, I would never
two together, right.
Put two and two together with you.
Yeah.
He was gagging me a little bit.
Any other deep dive stuff, or do we want to get into ghost lore quick?
Let's ghost it up.
Okay, ghost lore. The big things I noticed in this one is the Candyman five times, whereas, like, most other myths, I think it's, like, Bloody Mary three mm-hmm. times, Beetlejuice five. I don't know if that's significant.
It is, because five is the best number ever.
And then you can also possess someone as a ghost, which is something we see. I love the mirror aspect.
Weird kind of possession. Like, it's a possession, like a but a trance. State almost. But a, yeah.
Yeah. And then also something that is unique to the Candyman universe is just this connection of bees and the legend of Batai. And I love this hive kind of thing of various lynchings throughout the kind of, especially in the ghost. Y'all notice?
Yeah, you caught on to it. I was going to mention the whole collective of the bees and stuff like that. But yeah, I think you covered it all with it.
Cool. Yeah. Cool. I think it does a good job of, like, there's still, for me, a question. There's a lot more question in the first one where I was like, did she? Didn't she? Who did what? When? And this one, like, it's more clear, but there's still this, like, question of, aside from the reporter, right, where, like, you can see that, like, nobody is there. But, like, there is a question of, like, and I think if they had done it from Brianna's point of view, it would have been even stronger. Is Candyman real, or is Anthony? Yeah.
Because she made it actually, seem like she didn't believe that's... in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
Damn.
I mean, I don't mind.
Just do it again. Yeah.
Make more. Yeah.
I would watch. I would like not even go back. I would watch it again from her perspective.
Or they could still.
It'd
do
be
it.
Better than the like Twilight swap perspective stuff.
Oh gosh.
I mean, they could still do it if they do a sequel, just follow her this time around, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Cuz I mean, I would love to see it follow Brianna throughout the whole thing. But I didn't mind Anthony too, because this is the first time we actually see like a transition in him becoming something, where in the first Candyman we just heard about it. He was just there. That was it. Mm-hmm. We actually see him go through him being a struggling artist. Like, he had a story, and it just sucked how it sucks how he ended up, how his fate ended up being. But I also would like to see it in Brianna's perspective, because like you mentioned before, like, she didn't really believe in all this. She's like, Candyman, whatever, child, I'm just worrying about my art gallery, whatever. And then all of a sudden she becomes a true believer by the end of the movie, because her boyfriend now is Candyman.
Made me think. I would like to see a prequel of like maybe the first killings of Daniel Robitaille after he was murdered, to see what that would look like. Like, who thought, let me call his name? Who's the first person to do that, and why?
And who can, right. I mean, like, how did Daniel just sit there and like, all right, so they have to call my name five times and to do this and then and just
done it four times.
It just,
unless it's like
it did, like, there were Freddy things. Yeah.
Right.
Unless it was the people who made the legend and it just kind of fed in. Like, maybe it's a Freddy thing almost.
Yeah.
Like, you have to believe
in because at the end of this movie, he says, tell everybody. Yeah. And with Freddy, you have to tell people in order for people to believe or he's going to just go away. That was the whole point.
What's the time limit? Like, how long do you have to go before the clock resets?
And unfairly and get them into mess.
Right? Oh, poor Nancy.
Yep.
We're not this is y'all podcast, so I'm gonna keep it cute. I'm not gonna take Mike. So
well, since this is our Ghostbuster season, out of 10 proton packs, how would you rate this film? Do you have a favorite kill or ghost? however you wanna answer that. We usually start with our guests, but if you need time to think, one of it is.
I will give it a I'll give it a 7.5 out of 10.
All right.
Proton. Wait, you can't do half a proton.
Yeah, you can. Pack. You can in this.
All sorts of rules.
7.5 proton packs. I enjoy it. There are some things I wish would have been done. I wish it would have been longer. We would have touched on way more stories that they kind of hinted at but didn't really get into.
We give halves all the time.
My favorite kill. Actually, my favorite kill is the art gallery. Wait. I like the look of the art gallery kill. Just the colors and everything and him showing up in reflections. But I also like the bathroom kill. Because he was like, it's just multiple people.
For me, I didn't know we were doing this all since, because on Letterboxd I gave it a 4.5 out of 5. My dog's winning time. So I'll give it that. I'll say, like Mike, I'll give it like a 7.5 if we're doing it out of a 10. I love this movie. I love how it looks. The cinematography, the music, the score is amazing. Like Mike, as like what he said as well, it's just that I just wish that we got a little bit more. We talked about it throughout this episode that it jumps around a lot, and it's just like, I just hope we got a director's cut, but we didn't. But other than that, and also I just wanted them to go there with the kills. Like, I wanted to see a little bit more violence. My favorite kill is obviously the journalist lady being dragged across the window. I felt like that was a wonderful shot. It was so good. I loved it. And I just want to give a shout out to Vanessa Williams, because we didn't really talk about her, but she came back as Anthony's mama on this one. And
she did not age a day between the two.
She did.
Jesus.
No. That's another thing we could have seen. We could have seen Anthony's childhood with her when she decided to leave Cabrini Green.
If we had a 2-hour movie, we probably would have gotten that. But unfortunately, no. But yeah, shout out to her, and yeah, that's my score for the movie. My favorite kill.
Sweet. I guess Sunny, you go next. Emily likes it when I go last. When they go last. So I would rate this 8 out of 10 proton packs. Just because it is such a gorgeous movie, like beginning to end, the cinematography, such a great eye for visuals and creating a scene. But it doesn't quite get to a perfect 10, or said. Favorite kill, I probably go with I want to go with one of the ones y'all named, but instead I'm just gonna say I love that closing scene with Candyman just killed police and rescuing Brianna, and or perhaps not rescuing her. That's a question that we're kind of left on, but yeah, that'd be me. What about you, Emily? It appears that Emily has
Candyman got.
Oh no.
Wait, they just moved.
Well, so I.
There you go. There you go. You here?
Oh, there we go.
I think you may still be frozen again. After briefly not. Oh. They are re-entering.
I'm about to say, who's this?
So now we have two Emilys.
Candyman.
Oh,
gosh. I just thought, what was that movie? Yes. Host, or what was that movie? With the people?
And we talking about spirits and ghosts, child.
Right.
I think the ghosts would know technology at this point, so they probably could do this.
Right. Well, since Emily is... may or may not be rejoining us. We'll see. While we're waiting for them, do you have... first of all, where can our listeners find you all? Do you have any social media handles you'd shout out? And does People Under the Scares or either of you have any like that you like?
Well, I'll go first. Bobby Torres with his Not An Us. Yes, People_Scares on Twitter and Instagram. And we're working on some more episodes of some things. it's not necessarily a secret, but we're still figuring things out. And then also, check out Scream Kings. It's coming back hopefully this fall. But we do have old episodes on YouTube. So if you guys don't know about Scream Kings, it's me, Mike, Taymon, and Marco Estes. Just talking about different horror topics and final girls having battles and theme stuff and just a whole bunch of bickering and arguing, just a good ass time.
It's yeah, The View, but gays. With horror.
Yeah.
And queer people.
So right now you can watch that. No new episodes yet, but we will be recording that soon. But that's all I have. And Bobby likes to spook you on my YouTube channel. What about you, Michael?
Well, thank you for that. I on Twitter and Instagram, it is at ThackerayBinks86. Hocus Pocus mm-hmm. reference. Again, I've met people who don't know it. It makes you crazy. But like Bobby said, we'll be recording Scream Kings within the next few months, and then that'll be coming out sometime in the fall. Should be about like 12 or 13 episodes of different horror topics. You know, like last season we had, I think we ranked Final Girls. Mm-hmm. We talked about the franchises of Nightmare on Elm Street, Bobby's Halloween, his beloved Halloween, et cetera,
I think
et cetera.
You had like the horror tropes too, right? The like... Or yes. Your like least we favorite horror lot. Tropes, or you're like, it was something that was like.
I think that was on our podcast on People Under the Scares.
That
yeah.
might be it.
Oh, the, yeah, our pet, yeah. Our pet peeves.
Yes.
But that would be a good idea to do on screen, so maybe we'll talk to Tamon about that.
That'll be interesting, because you know I'm going to talk about I don't want kids being running around in horror movies getting people killed, and that's going to set Mark off. So.
Love it, love it. Since you were able to rejoin us, Emily, can you quick give us your rating and favorite kill?
Yes.
Yay.
Yes. I am going to rate this one an 8.5. 8.5. I really liked it, and for, like, similar reasons that you all said of, like, it's weird for me to rate something lower because I wanted more of it. Like, that's not the way I've ever rated a movie, ever, because usually I'm like, especially lately, I feel like we've been like, well, this movie dragged on for an extra 20 minutes, but this one was so full of stuff that I did want more of it. So I'll go 8.5. And the, like, my favorite kill is hard, because part of me wants to go the art gallery asshole,
mm-hmm.
because... I love redemptive kills. I love when the asshole is killed. But that also leads me to the other kill, which is the cops who are literally trying to set her up and kill her. And, like, so I think, like, on principle, there were more asshole cops than the one asshole gallery owner. So on principle, the cops were my favorite kill.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Yeah.
Seems fair.
Did you get any jump scares, Emily?
I did not get jump scares from this one. The only time... So, we've been keeping track of jump scares because horror and things. And the only time I've gotten jump scares have been in movie commentaries.
Season,
so, yeah. Like, anybody that listens to our movie comment... Any of our Patreon supporters who listen to our movie commentary on the original Candyman, there's, like, 4.5 jump scares. It's my record so
and
far.
They are very vocal, and they're jump scare, too, on this particular movie commentary. I like it.
Yeah. When I jump, it's, like, a whole gasp situation yes. if I jump. So you know when I jump, and frequently when I watch scary movies with other people... Well, I don't frequently do that, but when I do watch scary movies with other people... It is almost guaranteed that everybody else will because of my jump. Not because of the movie necessarily, but because of how I react to the movie. Yeah.
Perfect so, person to watch.
I feel like I...
this one.
Yep.
I'm a gasper too, though. True. Like, anytime something happens, I yeah. let, like I just gasp before anything. I don't necessarily jump.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And then our next movie is Nope. It'll be our last movie of the season before our Ghost retrospective with, and Nope was directed by Jordan Peele. It's 2022, and we will have special guest Rob Pitts. I am super excited to talk to Rob about this. Rob and I have been messaging this whole time, and I'm like, I want to.
And just yeah, a reminder, so. Or if you're just tuning in for this episode and missed all the other ones, I'm wondering why we're doing Nope as part of a ghost season, because it's really,
I mean,
it Well, we can argue that in the next movie if there's.
I will argue for it being a ghost movie.
It's because it was part of our last season scheduling comp. Got it. To this one.
We had a death in the household that like delayed. So
anyway, that'll be a fun combo. Thank you both again for being here. This was amazing. Yes.
Thank you.
This was fun. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, this was fantastic. I am so glad that you two could both be on. And hopefully we can do it again sometime in the future.
Of course. 90s horror movies, Rumpelstiltskin, Troll 2, I have plenty.
The Granny.
Plenty of recommendations. Yes, The Granny.
All right. I have not.
We'll find something for the theme.
We got you.
Whatever the theme is, we'll find something.
All right. Sounds good. And that is it for our show. Our theme music was by Matt May. Horror Nerds at Church releases every Thursday. Please comment, rate, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Support us on Patreon and get access to exclusive movie commentary episodes, BooTube episodes, and tons more bonus content coming up in our next season by going to patreon.com/horrornerdsatchurch. It starts at only $5 to sign up, which is much cheaper than gentrification.
Mm.
And also probably much cheaper than the hospital bill for going to that for a bee sting that just keeps expanding and expanding and expanding.
Also that.
That was also making me crazy. Go to the hospital! Right? What are you doing?
Right? Like, if it doesn't go away, you're allergic. Go to the hospital. Get your shots
men
of epi.
Men are stubborn. It could be something. It could be the biggest thing and they will not go to the hospital. They'll just, oh, hell on this own. No.
You're literally falling apart. Like,
I'll grow another finger. It's okay.
Yes.
Right.
I didn't need that eye. I have another one. That's fine. Follow us on social media. Till next time, go buy The Cross and the Lynching Tree by James Cone.